The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you're with us on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Have all kinds of news to share with you. No time to waste. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
I will be honest with you. I am more confused than ever about a lot of our friends and neighbors and coworkers around here. Because I've told you, I don't have any kind of a political litmus test for who my friends are. I have friends that run the entire range of the political spectrum. And I always try to be careful on this show to differentiate between liberals. And I think classic liberalism has a lot of things that I embrace. Question authority. Don't feel like you have to conform. Don't feel like you have to do what everybody else is doing. Dare to challenge the man. I mean, that's classic liberalism. So I don't dislike liberals. But there is a big difference between liberalism and the radical left that's taken over this region. And especially as I was putting together today's show, I will tell you, part of the exercise, if you are to be a good, or in this case, great talk show host, I always need to anticipate what the other side would say about my opinions. What arguments would they make? And then how do I counter those? And if you don't at least go through that exercise, then you are never going to be as good or as strong as you otherwise could be. But as I'm looking at this array of stories that is before me today, I truly, truly cannot see the other side right now. And I'm not talking about the classic liberals. I'm talking about Democrats. I'm talking about this growing number of extreme leftists. You probably work with a bunch of them. I know that I do. Your kids have to interact with them at school. You probably have neighbors who fall into that category. And more than ever, I cannot understand that worldview at all. Especially when you look at what's going on today. So you may recall, last winter, there was a story here in Seattle, made national news. It might sound like I'm beating up on the YMCA right now, because last week we did a story about the Dale Turner Family Y having drag queens read stories to three-year-old children, which I think is a horrible culture for parents to expose their kids to. If adults choose to be part of that culture and to have that as their entertainment, I couldn't care less. But it is a culture filled with drugs and the raunchiest of sexuality. And why a parent would want to expose their three-year-old to that, and why the Young Men's Christian Association thinks that that has more positives than negatives, I will never understand. And they were too cowardly to come on this show and explain their position, explain why they think this is a good thing for their members. And as I said, that particular YMCA, my wife and I have made a lot of donations to, memorial gifts when loved ones have passed, because it's the place we believed in. No more. I'm done. I'm done with the Y. And in telling that story last week, I mentioned that I was always, also, when I was in college, I was a YMCA camp counselor. I did summer camp for 2 years, and I did the after-school latchkey program for a little more than a year. I lived in Ballard, but I went all the way out to Woodinville and Bothell to be part of the Y camp out there. It was a fun job. We'd take kids to parks. We'd play games during the day. You'd try to enrich them. It probably sowed the seeds for the coaching that I wanted to do. Well, you may recall a counselor at a YMCA camp made national news here in Seattle last winter because he was a member of Antifa, and he was a violent social media poster for Antifa. Louis Cassiano at Fox News wrote about this guy, 23-year-old Mikhail Andrew Baker, who tweeted a list with names of businesses that wanted to see a sweep of Cal Anderson Park. And a lot of people took it as a, hey, let's go get these businesses because they want to clean up Cal Anderson Park. And that would be consistent with a lot of other stuff. It was called a hit list of Seattle business owners. Mikhail Andrew Baker has been identified as a trans non-binary furry and children's camp counselor. On some of his other posts, he said, I work full-time as a child care worker. And other posts by this young person were picked up on thepostmillennial.com last winter, where he said that if they stop the Cal Anderson sweep, that'll be a victory and they can carry it to the next action. He was involved in Chaz during the summer. He's expressed support for violent extremism. He says, I'm a revolutionary anarchist. I see open warfare against fascists and the state as a necessary evil to achieve liberation. In another tweet, he reportedly, according to thepostmillennial.com, said, what's the point of having guns if you're not going to use them to shoot racists? And when you're that radical, everybody's a racist. So it's advocating shooting everybody who doesn't think like you, apparently. So I got an email from a dad who was aware of this person being a Y counselor last winter. And he said that his 8-year-old daughter has for the last few years attended the YMCA summer camp programs at Seattle's Magnuson Park. I was horrified. He wrote to me this morning. I was horrified when I discovered via media coverage and then my own monitoring that one of the most prolific advocates, participants in the local Antifa violence was a YMCA camp counselor with whom I'd interacted several times. The counselor, Mikhail Andrew Baker, used his social media accounts to make regular and explicit appeals for targeted violence, including lethal action and criminal activity against a very broad range of persons, organizations he considered fascist. And then he quoted some of the things that I just read to you. So then the dad goes on to say, after sending me several links from this guy, we have enrolled my daughter in YMCA summer camp this year, both because she loves it and because our local options for full-day activities are limited. I was absolutely horrified to learn when my wife returned from dropping off our daughter at camp yesterday, that Baker is again employed as a counselor and will have regular, direct, and often unmonitored access to my daughter and other children. I stand by my previous assessment that Baker absolutely should not be allowed to interact directly with children because of the high risk that he'll attempt to radicalize them with his Antifa ideology, and because he may encourage the group to ostracize or bully children who are the children of fascists that he claims must be killed. So then this dad sent a back and forth with the executive director, the branch executive of the Seattle YMCA, a woman named Megan. She says, this is back in January when the dad first brought this up. And Megan said, thank you for the information. We've connected with our HR team. And the dad sent along many of the violent tweets that had been sent out. And Megan continues to say that due to confidentiality, I cannot go into specific details, but we will be investigating and taking the appropriate next steps once the investigation is completed. I will not be able to share the results of this investigation or any actions taken against staff. Okay, now, this dad says that this person is a YMCA camp counselor again, and they just found out that yesterday when his wife dropped off their 8-year-old. We, Nicole emailed Megan. I called Megan this morning. We are trying to get confirmation if this person who is a very violent social media poster and a self-described Antifa member and somebody who believes that everybody that he describes as racist should be killed. And we're trying to find out if it's true that that person is still a counselor at the Y camp. I will very much look forward to hearing back from Megan to see if that is so. But getting back to my initial point, right at the top of the hour, what has happened to us? I can't see the other side here. I can't see why people would employ, even if the employment was just last winter, if they said, no, he's not with us anymore. Why do you employ people who want to kill other people for a children's camp? I think about what purity of joy and mission, and it was very much a Christian organization when I worked at the YMCA for a couple of years. And we prayed with the kids, and it was really sweet. It was very wholesome. Now what is it? I can't see the other side anymore from where we are. And, you know, I'll go on and on. The homelessness issue. It is absolutely clear, more clear than ever, what I've been saying for the last several years must happen. We should provide options for every single homeless person to get warm bed, meals, alcohol, drug counseling, mental health counseling, job training. And if they don't accept that offer, we should put them in jail. But leaving people all over the streets, this isn't working. I can't see the other side anymore from where I am. It's not compassionate. It's the opposite of compassion. It's evil. It's evil for the heroin addicts that you're just watching slowly kill themselves. This precious, precious life. Life is so precious. And I say it all the time. We only get one shot at this. And we should be embracing it with a fullness of heart and spirit and love and joy. And we have a political machine that just has decided, no, we'll just let them all kill themselves slowly. But it's not just that. Even if it wasn't about rescuing the lives of the poor souls who are out on the streets, it's time to rescue the lives of the business owners and the citizens and the innocent motorists. I just got a cop told me there are more people who had stuff thrown at them on I-5 just in the last several hours. Guy that had that happen to him, a rock came through his window last January. His name's Stephen Vlasic. And, I mean, he was a great interview back then because he talked about how people were trying to kill him. It was homeless people. All he was trying to do was drive home from work.
Somebody just dropped something off the overpass onto me. Somebody attempted to murder me. That's what I think. It was an act of violence. It was a terrorism act.
It was a terrorism act.
I came this far away from dying or being seriously hurt. A rock would have went through the windshield. It was lined up perfectly with my chest.
He's just trying to live his life, and we've got some mentally ill heroin and meth addicts trying to kill him.
You probably heard my voice that it's affected me. I'm angry, and I've lost some of my freedom.
I can't see the other side from where I am now. I can't see hiring Antifa people to work with kids who advocate killing those with whom they disagree. I can't see letting heroin and meth addicts be all over the streets. Reagan Dunn, King County Councilman, says that King County needs to take over City Hall Park because what used to be a beautiful open space in the concrete jungle of downtown is now filled with tents. And with people who throw feces at men and women trying to walk to work. A man was stabbed to death 5 days ago there. 5 days ago, a man was stabbed to death ComoNews.com talked about Michael Zadejo, a longtime criminal who was once again walking free, just released by the radical left that runs the judicial system so that he could kill the guy.
Court documents say Michael Zadejo admitted to police shortly after his arrest that he stabbed Bradley Arabe to death following a 10-minute fight, telling his victim, "Just lay there, you're going to die," rendering no assistance after stabbing him in the chest, allegedly telling police he had no remorse for his actions and only God could judge him.
"Just lay there, you're going to die," as he slowly plunged a knife into his victim's chest. He had just been picked up, and there's a group that bails out the criminally, mentally insane people that are out on our streets, and they did it again. They paid the bail just a few days earlier so that this guy could get out to murder somebody.
"He's punching me in the eye, and even though he's punching me in the eye, a second guy came up, and between the two of them, they stole my camera."
Then days later, Zadejo allegedly beat Weisberger's legs with a stick when he tried to get his camera back. But what happened next may be a reflection of our criminal justice system.
"What we asked for was this person to be held in jail because we believed he was going to commit another violent act. Folks didn't agree with us, and unfortunately, he got out and killed the guy."
Prosecutors asked for a $50,000 bail for Zadejo following the Weisgerber assault. The judge reduced it to $20,000.
After that, there was a hearing where the bail was reduced to $5,000, and then a group posted his bail, and he was released.
Court documents show that group was the Northwest Community Bail Fund, which, according to its website, is a nonprofit advocating for bail reform and pays bail for poor people who would otherwise spend pretrial time in jail.
The Northwest Community Bail Fund, a radical leftist organization that released a violent, dangerous man, and then just days later, the man they got released murdered another man. "Just lay there, you're going to die," as he plunged a knife into his chest. Why do people put their life's energy into bailing out criminals so that they can go out on the street and kill people? I can't see the other side from where I am now. Usually I can form some kind of cogent argument to rebut what my view is, but this radical leftism, I can't see it anymore. Can you? Because at some point, everybody has to say, "No, we can't see what's going on. We're going to stop it." I'm going to take a quick time out here because I have lots more examples of this, and I want to I'm going to make this an extensive, long, big lead because I am hopeful, and this is the only thing I can cling to. I am hopeful that we are near that tipping point when all of us are going to see that there is no other side to righteousness and to protection of our neighbors and our families. Because right now we have a lot of people who are on the side of just evil. And I truly believe we're in a battle of good versus evil in our region right now. And politicians are part of that battle. And you probably can guess which side a lot of them are on. Okay, let me take a quick time out here, and then I'm going to continue with another... I did this last Tuesday, too, the extended special report. And we got a lot of stuff for you. Don't go anywhere. Dory Monson Show gets cooking. Oh, Aaron, every time I'm preparing for my next segment, and then I, with one ear, I hear something you're talking about, and I didn't get all the details.
Okay.
What am I supposed to do in my house now, and why?
Wildfire smoke, Dory. We have critical fire conditions today for parts of central Washington. So we talked to the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency. You should set up a clean air space in your home. This is where you can filter the air, close the windows, make sure that none of that smoke, in case it does start to drift over here to western Washington like it did last year, it doesn't affect you or your lungs.
And how do I filter it?
With the filter.
We just got rid of the masks.
Yeah.
Now I got to cordon off an area of my home.
You know, I didn't mention this part too, but another piece of advice from the Clean Air Agency is to avoid frying foods or vacuuming. That's another recommendation there. Just trying to piece that one together, but
okay, well, frying food, everybody should be barbecuing this time of year anyway. But that contributes to the smoke outside, I suppose.
Yeah.
If I'm going to cordon off an area of my home, can I put duct tape over the hole that I cut in the shower curtain for other purposes at the height of COVID? And I can just use that shower curtain as part of the cordon?
Sure. Why not? That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I'm a recycler. All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. There's another. This has become a Tuesday tradition here of Dory Monson Show special reports, where we go really in depth on a topic. Let's continue with our extended Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
If you are just joining us, I said that it is imperative, if you do the job that I do, to see the other side, to try to understand the other side of issues on which I disagree with others. And in doing so, by trying to anticipate how they can come back with why they're right, it sharpens my argument for why I am right. But now there is no other side on the stories that I'm telling you about. I don't believe that people who threaten to kill other human beings should be children's counselors at Christian camps. I just can't see the other side of that. I don't believe that there is any logical reason why we should have homeless people camping anywhere. They should either be in social services that we pay for, or they should be in jail that we pay for. But we can't keep letting them lob rocks and bricks and rebar off freeway overpasses. We can't let them walk up to City Hall Park and stab a man to death, as happened 5 days ago. We can't have them walk up and kick a Jack Russell Terrier so hard that it flies through the air and is killed, as happened 2 weeks ago. I don't see the other side anymore of letting all of this this humanity, and it's not for their benefit. Jail or treatment is far more humane than letting them die and kill innocent people in the process of them dying themselves. I don't see the other side anymore. And I'm going to keep making this case because I believe that we need everybody to stop equivocating and stop making excuses for another side of these social views that is simply insane. Here's another one, because I talked about why we need to either provide social services or prison, jail, for people who are camping outside. We have spent $10 billion in the last 15 years on homelessness in Seattle and King County. If you are a listener to my show, back in 2004, King County launched the 10-year plan to end homelessness. And they had a lot of good people. They had a lot of business people who were part of the committee. You know, political leaders who were somewhat moderate, business people who were philanthropic and well-intentioned. And I said at the time that it was going to be a gigantic disaster, because the homelessness industry loves homelessness. There are a lot of people making big six-figure salaries, and they don't want to fix themselves out of a job. And by the way, King County's 10-year plan to end homelessness, $10 billion spent. Did it end homelessness? No, we had the most dramatic increase in homelessness in the United States of America. It was an abject failure, as we said that it would be. So now what's the new one? King County promised to end youth homelessness by June of 2021. Let me check the old calendar on the wall. They got 8 days left to end youth homelessness. It was a campaign, Dow Constein, Jenny Durkin, people who have been failures at everything they've done politically, except to get reelected. That's the one thing they're successful at, because it's the only thing they care about. And so they can tell lies about how they can stand up with their big banner on poster board that says end youth homelessness now. And all of these people sit so admiringly about how much they care. Well, the Seattle Times just did an examination. And you may remember as part of this, Pearl Jam 2 years ago, they got together with the mayor and with Dow Constein. And they said, we are going to do concerts at then Safeco Field, and we are going to donate all of the proceeds to ending youth homelessness. Any kid who shows up at a youth shelter will get permanent housing in 30 days or less. They got federal grants. They had $1.2 million in philanthropy. They had the proceeds from the Pearl Jam concerts. How'd they do? Did they end youth homelessness? Well, King County spent $131 million on youth homelessness last year. $131 million total, $9 million earmarked for youth. Do we do well? No, the problem is far, far worse than it was when they all pledged back in 2004 and in 2019 and spent tens of billions of dollars. The problem's gotten dramatically worse. Why? Well, I can't see the other side anymore. I can't see this. Well, let's legalize drugs and let's attract all of the drug-addicted criminals from around the country to our region, and we'll build low-income housing, which makes developers rich, which creates six-figure jobs for government cronies. But if you house five people and 20 heroin addicts from Jacksonville, Florida, and Louisville, Kentucky, and Biloxi, Mississippi, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, if you draw in many more drug addicts than you can house, all you've done is enrich the bureaucrats and the developers. And until we stop legalizing drugs, once again start criminalizing drugs, and put people in jail and prison for their drug use after we give them the option. You don't want to go to jail? You don't have to. We'll get you treatment. It's not going to be a 2x4 over the head. It's going to be, hopefully, a lever to get them into treatment so they can get their life back. It's the compassionate way. But what we're doing now with heroin addicts, all their veins are scarred up, so they have to inject in their eyeballs so that they can still get their fix. Not so that they can get a rush from the drugs, but just so they won't get the crash from not having the drugs. That's what Jenny Durkin and Dow Constein are all about. I don't see the other side from here. There is no sensible argument. There is nothing to rebut what I'm saying on every single issue this hour. I tried to figure out what the other argument would be so that I could rebut it. I don't need to rebut it. There is no other logical argument for all of these things. Murders, dogs kicked to death, human beings overdosing, fentanyl problem that's worse than ever, drug addicts from all around the country. I'm going to continue the special report for one more segment here. Quick time out. And then we will talk about the tipping point that we are at as the Dory Monson Show continues. All right. We did last Tuesday on the vaccinations. This Tuesday, a full hour special report. Let's continue with our extended top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Because I do believe we are very near that tipping point where you have violent people calling for murder, working as Christian camp counselors. You have debris falling on innocent people driving up and down I-5 and I-90. You have a man stabbed to death, a dog kicked to death in City Hall Park within a few days of each other. The plan to end homelessness made homelessness worse. The $10 billion we've spent on homelessness has made homelessness worse. You want some more numbers? Last year, murders were up 35% in Seattle and King County, 35%. Then you take that inflated number of last year. This year, murders are up 49% from last year's record pace. We are killing each other in unprecedented numbers. Mainly, it is black and brown people are killing other black and brown people because this is, according to the police, mainly a gang problem. The gang problem is because we've legalized drugs in King County. And because we've legalized drugs, the Mexican cartels, who have a unfettered access to our country since Joe Biden won't lock up the border, and they're bringing drugs in record numbers, and the drugs are coming right up I-5 into the Seattle, King County, Tacoma, Pierce, Everett, Snohomish area. Why? Because we're the friendliest place in the world to be a heroin addict. And then the gangs get to street turf fights and they kill each other. And then we have politicians who say, we need more gun laws. We have a gun violence problem. They create every single aspect of the violence. It's not gun violence. I've never known that a gun acted on its own to kill somebody. We have a political violence problem. That's what's going on right now. When you legalize drugs, when you make it a sanctuary state, when you refuse to enforce, and then the fentanyl, they're trying to get people hooked on the most powerful of additives to these opioids. And then you have where we are right now throughout the region. And so, for one of the few times, I can't see the other side from where I am now. I can't make I can't make an argument for the insanity that those of us who are just trying to live our lives, who are trying to drive up and down I-5 without having a piece of rebar come through our neck, I can't make an argument for why we're keeping people on the streets when all they're doing is killing themselves and others. Why aren't we doing something about that? Why are we allowing that? I know why it's happening. I just can't make an argument for it. We've got two Marxists on the Seattle City Council. We have people who are completely beholden to Marxists in Jay Inslee and Dow Constantine, who have a lot of power and are afraid of speaking out, because especially Dow Constantine, because he wants to climb the political ladder. You have an attorney general who has weaponized the AG's office, and he also has higher political aspirations, so he won't do anything about the rampant lawlessness. Oh, he'll go after the florist in the Tri-Cities. Woo! He will take her down. He'll spend millions of dollars to take her down. The heroin addicts who are killing innocent people. No, we're not going to do anything about that in our attorney general's office, are we? Of course not. And it's sprinkling down to our kids. Woodinville used to be such a solid family community. And as I told you yesterday, the Woodinville High School yearbook filled with vile hatred of police officers. The North Shore School District has gone completely off the deep end in the propaganda that they're shoveling at the kids. And I haven't even gotten to that when I say I can't see the other side. The fact that we've allowed our schools to become, instead of institutions of learning, they've become institutions of too often propaganda. I will continue to try to understand where the other side's coming from so I can make arguments against it. But right now, there is no rational other side to everything that I'm telling you. And that's why we have to start galvanizing. We've got to understand that we're at a tipping point, and we can stand up or we can get smacked down. And the smackdown will be with violence if you don't conform, if you don't do whatever you are ordered to do by the 23-year-old black block masked person at the other end. I choose to have control of my own life, not assign it to other people. How about you? A quick time out here. We'll check the news and then. Whew, I got a lot of other stuff to talk about. It's the Doreen Monson Show. Continue.